Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 261 called Stacy Since. Okay guys, before we get started, I just wanted to let everybody know that my children's book about IVF is available. And it's called Work of Art, an IVF kid learns about assisted reproductive technology. It is the story of my son, Sonny, finding out how he was born and the very unique, great way that he was born. It is a love letter to both of my kids. It was written from the heart, and I'm so happy so many of you have purchased it and ordered it so far. If you guys are interested, there's a couple different versions. There's one that is personalized and numbered and ship free in the US. There's literally like less than five of those left, but then there's non-personalized versions available as well. So no matter which one you want, you can find them at infertileafgroup.com. That's where you can get them. There's also a link in my bio on Instagram, which is InfertileAF Stories. So Work of Art, my children's book, it's available now for order. It is at infertileafgroup.com/books. And on my Instagram, there's also a link in bio. Thank you guys so much. I hope you love it. All right. I had the best time talking to my guest today. Her name is Stacy Since. And she is a friend of a friend who came to me recently and said she wanted to share her story, which is really interesting on a couple different levels. The first level being that she was a donor-conceived child, but she didn't find out she was until she was 41 years old. So we're going to talk about that, the implications of that, and why that all turned out the way that it did. And it's super duper interesting. And then we're going to talk about her own infertility journey, which included 10 egg retrievals and so much more. So I don't want to give too much away, but she's super interesting. She's done a TED talk about this. Without further ado, this is Stacy's infertility story. Hi, Stacy. How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I just watched your TED Talk, which is all about donor conception. And we're going to start actually talking about that. And then we'll talk about your fertility journey as well. I have to give a shout out to my best friend, Helen, who is the curator of TED. She's like a big shit over at TED. And they do awesome. Such amazing things. So hi, Helen. I love you. She's great. And okay, so let's start with that. So yes. You gave this great talk and you've been very open about how you found out that you were donor conceived at the age of 41. So tell me about that. How did that whole thing come about?
It was pretty wild. And fun fact about that TED Talk, I was actually 10 weeks pregnant during that TED Talk, but not really telling anyone yet because, you know, we didn't know how it was going to play out. But imagine being on stage doing the most nerve-wracking thing of your life and being 10 weeks pregnant.
Well, you did not seem nervous. You were so polished. I was really impressed.
No. My hand, if you look really closely, was actually shaking. But thankfully, I don't think anyone else could see.
I couldn't tell.
That's awesome. Yeah, my life's been a little wild. Let's see. For my 40th birthday, I actually did 23andMe. I've just always been interested in, you know, genealogy and history and all that fun stuff. Little did I know that after taking it, a new first cousin was going to pop up.
Right.
And, you know, at that time, so I had a women's co-working space. And at that time I was working on national expansion and doing all these things and in over my skis. My father was sick, all these things. And I don't know about you, but when your cognitive load is like really high, you only have so much space. So it was just kind of like, huh, that's interesting. And I moved on. Right. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months later, another cousin popped up. And at that point, my father had passed. I had mourned. My business had expanded and settled down. I was no longer terrified that it was going to fail. And at this point, it was kind of like, well, this is weird. Let's figure out what's going on here. And honestly, I thought it was my mother. I thought my mother maybe was a product of a affair or something. Like, I didn't think it was me. I thought it was something going on with my mom.
Interesting. Because so, I'll interject really quickly by saying you said that your mom and your sister both started families much later in life, naturally. So you thought, you know, and at this point you hadn't had kids. So you're like, okay, well, this is just how it happens. And then when you find this out, you're like, oh, this is all based on a lie. Right. So the cousins keep popping up. And then
we start to try to, one of the cousins and I started trying to solve the mystery. I am like a dog with a bone. I have my degree in math. So I was going to solve it one way or the other. And I just kept digging and eventually took ancestry.com. And at that point, a half sister and grandmother appeared. And then I realized it was me and not my mother.
Okay. So what did you do? Did you approach your mom?
Well, it's funny because at that point I thought it was an affair. I thought she had had an affair with my father, you know, while she was married to my father. And yes, I did approach my mother. And, you know, imagine being someone who held on to a 41-year-old secret and my father had passed and she felt loyal to him. And he swore her to secrecy and never wanted to talk about it. So she was definitely conflicted, but she eventually told me the truth. And I was shocked. It was like plot twist. It was something I never expected, you know, because I had done IUI at one point and in 2017 and it was a failed IUI and I was really obviously devastated by it. And I was shocked that during that time I'm crying to my mother and I am thinking that she's never had fertility problems.
Right. And she didn't give it up at that point, right?
No, my father was still alive. Oh, yeah. She felt terrible.
She must have felt so conflicted, like you said, and you felt so much shock and anger and sadness. But how did your mom explain it? I mean, it was more of the norm then, right? When, you know, at the time that you were conceived, the norm that people just didn't really talk about this.
Well, similar to adoption, you know, adoption has really gone through this evolution. So is donor conception, right? In the 70s, they actually mixed the donor sperm with the dad's sperm. It was like, could be yours. Never talk about it. That was the advice that they gave parents.
Interesting.
So, you know, the world has evolved a lot and they just didn't know. And you do what you can do when based on what you know. There's a lot of parents that hold this secret in, and it's scary. It's so scary as a parent. You think all these things, will my kid love me different? Will it be different?
Right.
It's a tough thing.
Yeah. And I want to say, I feel like you probably feel the same way. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but for anyone listening, I feel like no judgment on my part, at least.
Right.
Like you do what you do, what you feel like is best for your family with the information that you have at the time. You know, I'm never going to shame someone for not saying something or saying something. My personal belief is talk about it, but that's me. And I don't want to pass judgment on anyone who might be listening, you know, shame somebody because everybody's situation is so different. So I just want to put that out there
scary,
as well.
Right? Yeah. It's so scary and it's so hard and it's so vulnerable. So I agree. I mean, obviously it was hard for me to learn that at that age. And I obviously do believe that the more open we can be, but I also feel for my parents and I feel for other parents because, you know, the fertility industry is advising people in certain directions and you don't know better.
Exactly. But you said, interestingly, I thought the quote was really good. I wrote it down. You said, my whole life, I felt like something was off, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So tell me about that.
Yeah. You know, I sometimes joke that I feel like I was in a twin study. You know how they like study twins that had never met each other. And, you know, I sometimes joke about that because I met my biological father and my biological grandmother at 41. And I swear it was spooky how similar we were.
Right. Tell me how that meeting came about. You just reached out to them and they were receptive to it? Or were they in any way surprised? Or, I mean, obviously, probably they knew what was going on, but were they surprised to be contacted by you?
So my biological father donated sperm all throughout med school. And so he's always known that this could happen, but I don't know if he really thought it would happen, right?
How did you find him?
Well, I was single for a long time. I did a lot of online dating. And, you know, when you're online dating, you got to do your due diligence before you go on one of those dates. So you get pretty good at Googling people and making yes. sure that you're not walking into some crazy situation. So
right.
if I'm being honest, I was an internet detective.
Yes, I love that.
Not in this aggressive, over-the-top, inappropriate way, but just right. trying to put the pieces together kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I actually
investigative journalism.
Exactly. Exactly. Not intrusive journalism. Wasn't wanting to like intrude in this gentleman's life. But I found an email address for him and sent him an email. However, I didn't realize. And the first email was when I thought it was an affair. And I was very just matter of fact. I said, hey, Grant, turns out I'm related to you. Do you know Susan Taubman?
Wow. Did you tell your mom that you were going to do this?
No, this is before my mom and I talked. And so, okay. you know, 8 hours later, I find out that I was going to conceive. So I had to write him an email that was like, hey, I'm so sorry for my
amazing. Earlier email.
I'm sure you never thought when you were 20 something that, you know, because keep in mind, in the 70s, we never would have thought that this kind of technology and ability, right. you know, these yeah. people were donating with the idea that this would yeah. never be something they found out.
It's so wild how much has changed in the past 40, right? 50 years, isn't it? It's wild.
It is so wild. Yeah. So, yeah. So I emailed him the second time. The funny thing is he never saw either email.
Oh, okay.
Both emails went to his junk, but I didn't know this.
Okay.
And he is a world-renowned, famous plastic surgeon.
Wow.
And highly active on Instagram and just so impressive. And so I was like, you know what? One last ditch attempt without being over the top. And I sent him a message. I slid into his DMs on Instagram.
I love that.
And I just said, hey, I'm so sorry if you already saw my emails. I expect nothing from you. I'm just curious if I have other siblings and I'm curious about my health. If you wouldn't mind sharing that information, I right. would so appreciate it. But I don't want this gentleman to think I'm trying to invade his life in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Well, he didn't see that for almost a month.
Okay.
And during that time, he had a widowmaker heart attack.
Oh, wow.
And almost died.
Wow.
On okay. October 31st, 2019, he had a widowmaker heart attack and he is lucky to be alive.
Okay.
And he was laying in bed on November 6th, in the middle of the night, and for the first time in his life, slowed down enough to stumble upon my messages.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And I'd wow. just given up hope that I would ever meet him. And I woke up to like 60 likes because he obviously had gone through my Instagram.
Oh my God.
And he was like, and we just started a conversation. And 2 weeks later, I got to meet him and my cousins and my grandmother and all the family.
Wow. So were you the first child that had reached out to him? You said he was, you know, donating sperm on the regs. So you're the first one that I actually, am. That's so
I'm the
cool.
only one that has appeared actually. And okay. every time I get an alert from 23andMe and or Ancestry.com, I brace for impact.
You're like yeah, exactly.
What sibling am I going to have? You know, it's sibling season as we call it.
Yes, exactly. So did you said that genetics were an important factor, you know, in learning about your medical history and all that stuff. Did you guys go over all that stuff? And what was it like actually meeting him? I'm sure that was really emotional in so many different ways.
It was bizarre, right? You know, so to get my business open, I went on a lot of coffees, you know, to find my husband, I went on a lot of first dates, you know, so I went into it just assuming it was just going to be a coffee date, so to speak, and just like get to meet this interesting person and learn a little something about myself. I didn't have any expectations past that. It was fascinating to meet somebody who and have this instant connection on this like deeper level that you never expect and to feel like you have a mirror held up about like our energy and our behavior and our who we are as people. And then we went to dinner and I met my biological grandmother. One of my cousins or uncles said to my bio dad, if you want to know what Grandma Donna was like at that age, just look across the table.
Wow. And you shared photos too during yes. your TED Talk yeah. of like, yeah. you guys have the same ears and like the same nose. And I mean, that must yeah. have just been so wild.
It was funny because so I'm actually a secret introvert. I know that's hard to believe, but it's true. I had been going a mile a minute with my business. I flew out early on the Saturday morning and I was so worried about like meeting him, then going out to drinks and then going out to dinner and having this long day. I was like, there's no way I'm going to survive this. I'm going to be exhausted and it's going to be a really hard day. I have never felt so energized in my whole life. Because being in a place where you feel seen for the first time, like deeply seen, it's just, it's crazy. It's a crazy feeling that's really hard to put to words until you experience it. And then mix all of my fertility issues myself into all that.
Right. I want to talk about that in just a minute. But first, did you have like a jumble of emotions? Like, did you have, were you mad? Like, did you feel deceived? Like, not necessarily towards him or towards your mom, but just in general, like, wow, life as you knew it was kind of a lie, or, you know, portions
was a lie, a big lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, look, I love my parents. I am so thankful to have the parents that I've had. So I know how lucky I am. And I was really angry at them. I was really angry and I was really hurt because I really mourned for that little girl that could have felt, instead of like a second-rate version of myself, like a first-rate version of just a different person. Half my genetics came from a stranger.
Right.
And so I just, it was tough, right?
How do you navigate that?
You know, my mom and my dad were great parents. So you have, I had to remember that. It took, if I'm being honest, it took me about a year to truly forget my mother. I mean, my husband and my father-in-law are amazing humans, and they remind me, of course, how amazing my mom is and got me in front of her, you know, like 3 weeks later. But I honestly wasn't wanting to talk to her at all. And not because she's not a great mother, not because I don't love her. It was just so much to absorb in my life.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, but I did, you know, and I intellectually understood why she did what she did. I could intellectually be like, I probably would have done the same if I was in her shoes. So holding that against her is probably not the best thing. But emotionally, it took me a good year to let it go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I've forgiven her and, you know, like, and we're fine now. But it took a long time to rebuild that trust. And my father had passed away at that point, so I didn't have a chance to talk to him about it.
Right. One other thing that you said that I thought was interesting was that your bio dad, I believe, said to you, or said to somebody, like, don't date anybody who looks like you. It could be your brother. Who did he say that to? Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So he has a daughter who he raised.
Okay.
He donated sperm at Washington University, which is in St. Louis, which is where I'm from, and was single for a really long time and dating for a really long time. So when he shared the story that when his daughter went to WashU for undergrad and he said to her, hey, be careful. Don't date anyone that looks like you.
Gotcha.
Your brother.
Right.
You know, I can't help but laugh at that story. But when I stop laughing, I'm like, oh my God, I really could have dated my brother.
Yeah.
It's totally. Actually terrifying. And so, I mean, it's funny and terrifying all in the same token.
Yeah.
So thus far, I looked at my husband. I was like, we do look a little bit alike. Can you get genetic tested?
Did you guys get tested or did he do 23andMe?
No, he wouldn't do it. He's like, Stacey, I look just like my father. There's no way I am conceived. I was like, I hope not, because this could be bad.
I feel like we could go off in so many different directions. There's so many things I want to ask you just about this in general. I will say also, you know, like we were talking about the book that I wrote about IVF, which is called Work of Art, about me telling my son he was born through IVF, and, you know, you with your donor conception story, you know, I think we both agree it is important in our worlds, at least, to talk about this stuff and normalize these conversations and let kids know, you know, when you feel it's appropriate, you know, where they came from and how badly they were wanted, and that there's so many different ways to build a family. You know, I feel really passionate about that.
I agree. And so again, similar to adoption, like, you know, they used to think not talking about it was the right path. You know, there's now research to show that it's better to talk about it early and often. Similar concept. You know, there's a psychotherapist and author, Jana Rupnow, who wrote a really good book about it. So I know a lot of parents are like, oh, how do I talk about it? You know, similar to what you're navigating, you know, she wrote a book specifically around this topic. So there's great resources out there for all the conversations. And I'm excited about your book because I think it is also really difficult. How do you talk about it? You know,
Right. Thank you for saying that. Okay. So let's get into your infertility journey. You had mentioned that you'd done an IUI. Was that because you were trying to get pregnant naturally and it wasn't happening, or how did we get to that point?
Yeah. So my husband and I met in 2015. So I was later in life. Like I said, I was single for a long time. So I didn't know if pregnancy was going to be my cards. I didn't know if motherhood, I always wanted it, but I just worried that it would never happen. Mm-hmm. I was an entrepreneur and starting a business and crazy busy. And my business partner, my husband and my soon to be husband and I at that point decided that we were going to try to start having kids in 2016. We were going to get started early. We weren't engaged. We weren't married. But, you know, we'd been together a year and we knew it might be a problem. So we dove right in. And after about 6 to 8 months of trying, my business partner was also going through infertility. And she went to the top infertility specialist in St. Louis. And while there, she booked me an appointment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She knew I was, stressed about it too.
Yes.
And it was fun. You know, starting a business is kind of like having a kid, right?
Totally.
So like we were raising a kid together, she and I, in some ways. And then, and she knew this was important to me. So it was nice to go through this journey with somebody that is like family to you and hear what her journey was like compared to my journey. You know, she was much younger than I was. So when the doctor said that pretty much good luck with IUI or natural, most likely you need to do IVF. But yet he didn't say that to her. I realized like this doctor's not just pushing IVF on us. This is because of my results. But my mm-hmm. husband and I were not ready to give IVF a chance. That was a big jump, right? IUI is a little bit cheaper, less invasive. So we were like, why not give IUI a try? Even though the doctor was very clear that the likelihood was low.
Okay. So how many did you do? Just one or?
I did one medicated round, and on my 39th birthday, I got the phone call saying it didn't work. I was like, this is awesome.
I'm sorry. That's so hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was, you know, and at that time in the meds, I didn't do well on the meds. I have hormone migraine. So I was miserable on the meds. I'm trying to get my business going. I'm trying to work on national expansion. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I was pretty defeated after that. So there was a period from 2019 to 2021 that I was like, maybe it's just not in my cards.
Okay. So
maybe
had
I'm
you
just
still,
not meant to be a mom.
After the IUI that didn't work, did you still just keep trying naturally or like?
We did. And of course I was like every month being like, ooh, am I pregnant? And devastated every month that, that I wasn't, but really still holding on to hope that maybe somehow miraculously I'll get pregnant the old fashioned way.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Absolutely. So when did you move on from that?
Well, so COVID hit. And like I said, I had a women's co-working space. So when COVID hit and no one wanted to come work in a space, I started contemplating, what is life like if I shut down my co-working space? What does life look like? You know, all my heart and energy was getting poured into this other baby, my business.
Right.
And for the first time in many, many years, I started thinking, what if I wasn't pouring all my energy into that? What would I do? And I started thinking about pursuing IVF. I actually was on vacation in September 2020. I know that's controversial given that it was COVID, but it was like a better time for COVID and I needed a break. And I remember laying by the pool and thinking, maybe I'll start trying this again. So I started researching Barbados IVF because it's known to be cheaper.
Okay.
So I thought about maybe going down to Barbados and doing IVF down there. I didn't end up pursuing that, but I, for the first time, started because, it's expensive. IVF is pricey. And I just didn't know if we were ready or able to make that kind of commitment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So were you still in St. Louis at the time or had you moved to Denver at this point?
Yeah. So I had locations to my business in both St. Louis and Denver. So I was actually doing about 50-50 between the two cities.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so I did. So after that vacation, instead of pursuing the Barbados, in January of 2021, I did decide to go to a Denver-based fertility clinic. You know, Denver's known to have some pretty big fertility clinics. And so I did start some testing in Denver. Mm-hmm. And my tests weren't so great being at that point, 41, 42? Mm-hmm. So they were definitely going to want me to do donor eggs.
Okay. So what did you find out from those workups specifically?
good question. I actually like looked it up because I was like, she might ask me questions.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, what were
results? I'm not surprised knowing you or the little I know about you, but knowing what I know about you, I'm not surprised you did your research and you've got notes and you're all prepared.
Totally. I'm very nerdy at heart. That's
I love that.
Everyone should have. You know, my AMH at that point was 0.7. So not like the worst of the worst, but not great. And then my FSH at that point was 9.9. So, you know, in being 41 or 42 at the time, most places would advise for me to get donor eggs at that point. And and I already knew that I was donor conceived at that. So that, not that I was ruling out donor eggs to start a family. I don't think starting a family with donor eggs is like bad or wrong. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't ready to pull that trigger.
Okay. Are you still like, I want to try to do retrievals on my own.
Because I had all these conflicting feelings about it. Like I was still healing and wrestling with what it meant to be donor conceived. So to add this extra layer onto it, it was just too soon for me. Mm-hmm. And one of my members in my co-working space, actually in Denver, one of my Denver members, she was a mom that was got pregnant in her 40s and had told me about a place in New York that specialized in getting older ladies, if you will, pregnant. So and she told me all about this type of IVF called mini IVF or minimal stimulation IVF. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, what's this? I'm going to give that a try. Mm-hmm. So I actually started my IVF journey in New York.
Okay. So tell me about that. What happened? You got here, you traveled, and what did they do? You know, walk us through the steps.
Yeah. Well, the place in New York, what's cool about that is I could actually do most of the treatments in Denver. Okay. So they had outside monitoring. So I actually did a lot of it virtual and then went to a local place for the blood draws and the ultrasounds and all that fun stuff, but then went to New York for the actual egg retrieval.
Okay.
So most of it was actually done in Denver, surprisingly enough. And it was interesting. The place I was in at Denver, I had other women there that were coming that also were doing mini IVF. And the two places they were doing it was from New York and California.
Okay.
And so it was interesting to hear about, you know, their experience and what it was like for them.
Totally.
And it was, you know, mini IVF is a fascinating type of IVF that a lot of people don't know much about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell us about your experience with that. And for somebody that might not know, can you give us kind of the Cliff's Notes of, do people even know what Cliff's Notes are anymore? I'm old.
I do. I mean, I'm old. So, you know.
Give us the elevator version of what that is or what it was for you.
Keep in mind, I'm not a doctor. Yeah. This
right.
Is
of course.
Non-doctor version.
I always say that. I always say that on the show. This is not a medical podcast, you know, but run everything by your medical professionals.
Yes. My understanding.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Of it is that when you're over 40, all those drugs they pump you full of during conventional IVF really don't work that great, right? So it's like, why pump your body up with all these drugs when it's not even going to really work anyway? So with minimal stimulation, it's more about lower targeted drugs, and it's about quality of eggs versus quantity. Mm-hmm. So I think the most eggs I've ever had retrieved was 4. But what's interesting is I would have four eggs turn into 2 or 3 embryos. So I had a higher number turn into embryos, but a lower number pulled out because we weren't stimulating my body as much. Right. And honestly, I don't know if my body ever would have made more. It would just mess up my hormones. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's amazing about mini IVF is the price point, right? So conventional IVF often is around $30,000 all in, right? Mm-hmm. In the New York doctor, it was paid a la carte. So based on how far you got, you paid. So I think our New York endeavor was like $10,000 maybe, you know, for the first round. So that's a significant difference.
I love a la carte. It makes it sound so like fancy, like you're ordering a really lovely meal or something, you know?
Yes,
like,
totally. Yes. And I was so naive the first round, you know, we got three eggs, 2 turned into embryos. And I was convinced that it was going to be like, great. Yay. It's all going to work. Right. And then we got our genetic testing back and it was like, these are not viable. These do not pass PGTA testing. And I was crushed.
Yeah. So did you have any healthy ones?
Okay. Nope. I never did. I did 10 rounds and never once had a healthy embryo.
Wow. I was going to say, I know that you talked about doing 10 egg retrievals, but you never once had one healthy embryo from those. Wow.
I never had one embryo come back. What do they call it?
Euploid.
Thank you. None of them came back euploid. They all came back aneuploid, or however you say that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell us about that. You know, you're so upbeat and positive and in a different place now, but that, you know, tell me about the mental implications of that. That must have been really devastating and hard.
It was. I mean, and, you know, not to keep talking about my business, but, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, your life is your business.
Yeah.
And I had built this business that was my baby, and I was trying to keep that alive during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And while that, I also thought it would be, you know, co-working space is a real estate play, and I had 11,000 square feet in Denver that was pretty much sitting empty because no one wanted to come use it. So why not try this fun new business inside of it? I had opened up a med spa inside that. So not only was I trying to keep one business alive, I was trying to get a new business up and running.
Wow.
And trying to create a human. Like, who does that? That was like a recipe for disaster in many ways.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot. You know, and I think my MO, which I think a lot of successful women's MO is, I numb through being busy, you know? And if I'm being perfectly honest, I was a mess. I was an emotional mess.
Mm.
I probably was the worst boss. I apologize to anyone who's ever worked for me.
Oh, you well, seem pretty great, but I'm imagining at the time it was different.
Well, imagine when you just don't have a lot of capacity, right? Like everything's triggering you. You're sad. Something I realize I do when I'm like spiraling out is you fixate on the stupidest things. Like you fixate on like these like small details, like are the coffee cups not organized? Or like, you know, like these minute hyper fixations.
Well, things that you can control.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it was rough. Let's see. I started in 2011 or 2021 in January or February. You know, all throughout that year, did several. We ultimately switched from New York to California. So I did two egg retrievals from New York. The first one was pretty good, except for the nut that didn't pass. The second one wasn't great. My FSH had shot up through the roof, and we only had one egg, and it turned out to be non-viable. So it didn't even fertilize. Mm-hmm. And I was crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Crushed. Well, during that time, I stumbled upon a California place called Life IVF. Somebody had told me about them, and I watched their webinar. And I'll tell you what, a lot of fertility places are kind of doom and gloom for women over 40.
Mm-hmm.
I watched this webinar and this doctor at Life IVF be like radiating positivity and talking about all the tough cases he's ever done and not to give up hope. And he, you know, you can do it. It was just such this breath
That's
of
what
fresh
you
air.
Needed to hear. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, oh my God, there's hope. Maybe I can do this. Cause at that point I was like, well, maybe I either quit or maybe I try donor eggs. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was so bummed. I watched his podcast, his webinar. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to try in California. And my bio family is in California. So I was like, and fun excuse, I can actually see my bio family and get to know them better.
Okay.
So I started, and the place in California, when I did it, they had a package where you could do three egg retrievals all in. This is a couple of years back. I know the prices have gone up, but at that time, three egg retrievals all in for $20,000.
Okay. Wow.
That is unbelievably cheap.
Yeah, it is.
And so I was like, okay, here we go. So two packages of three later. So we're up to eight egg retrievals.
Okay.
I'm still not passing PGTAS testing. I'm making embryos. I'm making high grade embryos and I'm not passing.
Oh,
and
wow.
I look at the doctor and I was like, I think I'm ready to quit. I think I'm ready to do donor eggs. And he said, Stacy, don't give up hope. I can get people pregnant with donor eggs as late as 48 or 49, 50. You're not there yet. You're too young to start worrying about that.
Okay.
And that is not the typical narrative
in
the fertility industry, that a 44-year-old woman don't give up yet. You could do this. So I did two more rounds. And at 10, I was like, I'm done. But thank God I did two more rounds because one of the two embryos that I transferred came from those later rounds.
Okay. So tell us about getting to that point and finally getting some viable embryos and embryos, right?
I didn't get healthy. I still didn't have healthy embryos, but here's the thing.
Oh, okay.
After 10 rounds, I was like, okay, if I'm going to go the donor egg route, I need to feel like I did everything I possibly could. And I am, as we already have acknowledged, a researcher. And I had researched all different things. There's PRP, ovarian rejuvenation. I don't know if you've read about that.
Yeah.
For older women, I considered doing that. I read all these articles about people who got pregnant with non-viable embryos, like these aniplold embryos they transferred that actually still got pregnant. There's all this research happening around how accurate are these tests.
Interesting. So they weren't like quote unquote mosaic embryos? Or
well, that's
they?
A good point. I had one mosaic.
Okay.
It was a low mosaic 14. And 14, they often say don't transfer because low mosaic 14 is not great. It has a lot of problems. But that's all I had. And I was going to transfer a second one that was not mosaic. It was a high grade. I think it was a 4AA, but it was a trisomy 1, which is like the likelihood of that working is slim to none. But I was going to do it. I was like, I've got to at least try. Most likely it won't happen. And so they counseled me about all the things that would happen.
Okay. So you met with like a genetic counselor to talk you through all this?
Not a genetic counselor, but the doctors.
Or like,
the IVF count. They definitely told me straight what would probably happen and just setting the stage and setting expectations.
Okay.
They were willing to do it as long as I was very clear on the possibilities that probably were going to happen.
Did they give you like percentages or likelihoods? Like,
they didn't, but it was pretty clear there was a high, high, high likelihood I was going to miscarry if I didn't, you know, well, there was a high likelihood it wouldn't even attach like an implant. And then if it did implant, the likelihood I was going to miscarry. And then if I didn't miscarry, there were some other potential scary ramifications.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, what's interesting is about a week before I transferred, new research came out and I changed my plan a week before we transferred. Research from the company that does the genetic testing, my doctor sent it to me. And again, I'm not a doctor. I'm going to screw up the details. So do your homework.
Yeah.
But my take as a layman is that when you have something called a chaotic embryo, which means six or more problems, six or more genetic issues, they call that chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
When you get a chaotic embryo, there's new research to show that 40% of the time it's like a false positive.
Wow. Okay.
That if you retest it, it's actually a healthy embryo.
Wow. Okay. That is really interesting. Yeah.
So I changed my plan from, I did the low mosaic 14 and then I got rid, I did not do the one that had a trisomy 1. I did a chaotic embryo. I did a chaotic.
Okay. So you did two.
I did two.
Okay.
And within 6 days I took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my HCG numbers were through the roof.
Okay. And this is the first time you've ever been pregnant, right? Okay.
And ever done a transfer.
Wow.
I was shocked.
So
imagine 10 times you're like hitting a wall. And so it was just kind of like, I'll just give this a try. You know, the likelihood's low, but it's a last ditch effort. So imagine the shock and awe when I actually got that pregnant. Yes.
Yeah. What did you guys think? I mean, wow.
Disbelief. I didn't believe it. And again, you're seeing a trend. I actually, because I had done outside monitoring and had to get tests, you know, there are labs in Denver where you can just sign up for a blood test, not through a doctor's order, just, register for a blood test. So I actually started going in for HCG blood tests early and often just because I was like, I couldn't believe this was actually happening. And I needed that reassurance that it was real.
Right. Now, were you worried that, you know, this being the chaotic embryo, the low mosaic embryo, that something, even though you were pregnant, that, you know, A, you might miscarry or B, something might be wrong with the baby?
Especially when you start going down the rabbit hole of what it means to have a low mosaic 14.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not good. It's not pretty. So yeah, I was terrified. It was rough, but it's hard, right? Because you want to be happy, but yet you also know that like, it's that bracing, again, that bracing for impact, you know, like, yes, this is great. And the likelihood that this is for real is very low.
Was there a point where you did start to feel comfortable, confident, or was it just anxiety like all along?
Well, what's interesting is so at 5 weeks, I did have some blood, like a decent amount. So what my hypothesis, being the non-medical person that I like to think that I know stuff, I was like, you know, I wonder if that's when one of the embryos passed. And then that next week I, did an ultrasound at five, 6 weeks. I did an ultrasound. I did see the sac. Right. So, I did start to be like, well, maybe this is going to work. And then when you're high risk, like me, and you do the IVF that I've done, you have an ultrasound almost every week for a long time. So seeing it every week did give me hope right? Mm-hmm. And give me a little bit of confidence. But like, we didn't tell anyone in terms of family. Some of my friends knew, but I'm pretty public on social media, but I didn't feel comfortable being public on social media. And I waited so long to say anything publicly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw every doctor you could imagine having this kind of pregnancy. You would go to MFM, you know, the specialist. Mm-hmm. And I remember she was like, "Stacey, this baby looks healthy. This baby, I mean, obviously I can't promise, but she's right. like, from what I'm seeing, I'd be shocked." To the point where we decided not to do an amniocentesis. We were going to do amnio to test it.
Okay.
And we decided not to because the MFM was like, I didn't want to risk it. And the MFM was like, "I think this baby looks so healthy." And I was wow. so hopeful. And yeah. I was like, and that's when we started leaning in. I made a public post. Mm-hmm. I finally started to believe it. And the next day a geneticist called me and scared the living hell out of me.
And said what?
She said, "I want to talk to you about something that could be happening that your MFM hasn't talked to you about." And I was like, "Why haven't they?" And she's like, "Because it's so rare."
Was this somebody that you knew, or was it someone that like seen your post and reached out?
Nope. This is somebody that works for, let's see, the MFM. It was somehow connected to the MFM.
Okay.
So it was just coincidence that literally the day after I posted, I got this call from a geneticist.
Okay. But sorry, one more question. You had heard the heartbeat and everything at this point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. We had heard the heartbeat. We had done growth ultrasounds. He was measuring good size. You know, when you have low trisomy 14, if it was low trisomy 14, there's some tell signs, right? There's like, they tend to not grow as much. They have a heart defect, you know, all these things. We had been to a heart specialist. I mean, this baby was watched more than any baby. Well, I shouldn't say that. It felt like it was being watched tremendously. To go to a fetal heart doctor to do all these tests, and all these tests keep coming back positive and having all these like good results. We really were feeling hopeful.
Okay.
Until the geneticist calls me.
And what did they say?
She said, "With low mosaic 14, trisomy 14 is when you have three chromosomes of 14, right? If a baby is born and it only has two chromosomes of 14, what can have happened is something called a rescue, I think. Again, I'm probably screwing up the details. It's complicated. But when you have two chromosomes, usually one comes from the mom and one comes from the dad. Sometimes if you start out with three chromosomes and it goes down to two, sometimes it could be two chromosomes from the mom or two chromosomes from the dad. So a child could be born, it's very rare, but a child could be born with two chromosome 14s, but not having one from the mom and one from the dad, having two from the mom or two from the dad. And that is a whole different realm of potential problems.
Okay. So what does that result in problems-wise? Or
quite complex. And they obviously, it's so rare, they don't have a true sense of it, is my impression. I was like, "Why didn't the MFM talk to me about this?" And she's like, "Well, it's really rare." And I'm like, "Oh, awesome."
Okay.
You know, there's cognitive issues, there's physical issues, there's just an array of issues. And it's a spectrum of issues. And so it could be something minor, it could be something major. And it's lifelong and it's not great.
Okay.
And
so that must have scared the shit out of you, right?
The living bejesus out of me, you know, because it's like, obviously at that point in my pregnancy, I wasn't going to make any drastic decisions.
How far along were you? Ish?
I think 19, 20 weeks, 21, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to make any drastic decisions, but I was terrified. Mm-hmm. You know, and look, I would love a child, whether it's healthy or not healthy, or it had challenges or not challenges, but yeah, it's just to go from those highs and lows, right? To go from like bracing and not thinking it's going to be okay, to finally leaning into hope and feeling like maybe it's going to be okay, to then being like, "Oh, wait, I don't know. Maybe it's not going to be okay."
Right.
And so the whole rest of my pregnancy, that was sort of looming. Now, I have good friends and great people and that have experienced all different things. You know, I had a friend who had experienced a stillbirth and she, you know, was so helpful. And you know, yeah, I just tried to put it on my mind and I tried to have faith that it would be okay. And he was showing all signs of being a healthy baby. I mean, we had an ultrasound every 2 weeks at that point. So I got to see this baby a ton and he was still showing healthy signs. So I was still hoping it's a chaotic embryo that's actually a false positive is what I was like praying for.
Right. And there's no way of knowing which embryo it was, right?
Okay. No way, no. And And so, yeah, but every growth ultrasound, he started measuring smaller and smaller and smaller.
Okay.
So that, and that potentially started to feel like a sign. It could be anything. It could be just that my placenta was wearing out because I'm old.
Okay. Okay.
Or it could be a sign that there was this genetic anomaly or abnormality, I should say.
Okay.
And so I had a scheduled C-section for June 7th. Mm-hmm. That was a Friday. The Friday before, I went in for my last growth ultrasound and he was measuring 9%.
Okay.
And this MFM was like, oh, this is probably a sign that he has a genetic abnormality.
And then does your heart just sink again?
Yeah. Cause I mean,
like you said, it's such a roller coaster, right?
Yes. At that point I had sort of put it out of my mind. I was just being hopeful, just preparing and thinking it was going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And so when she brought that back up and said that this is probably a sign that, that this is a genetic, I was crushed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like panicked. I can't wait a week with this lingering over my head.
Right.
And you know, by the end of pregnancy, you're miserable. I mean, I was 37 weeks pregnant at that 37, 38. I was miserable. I'd been laying on the couch, you know, miserable since 33 weeks.
Right.
So I was just like, oh, I can't wait till Friday. And they were worried because of the restricted growth, right? They were worried about him. They were worried about all the things. So we actually moved my C-section up to that Sunday. It was a Friday. And instead of waiting till the next Friday, we moved my C-section up to that Sunday.
Okay. Tell me about that Sunday.
Oh, girl. So nervous because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
On top of just like the normal nerves of becoming a mother and having a C-section and, you know, thank God for TikTok. I know I'm 45 and should not be watching TikTok, but I had seen every TikTok you could imagine about a C-section. So I felt like I knew what to expect. And
I love that.
I'm that person. So yeah, I mean, we were terrified and when they put him on my chest, I mean, I could start crying and he looked just so healthy. He looked like a doll, you know,
like
an actual doll. And he looked so healthy.
Yeah.
And it was, and they right away latched on and was breastfeeding and, you know.
Oh my God.
And
oh my
we God. Had made the decision to do genetic testing in the hospital just because like, obviously, we're going to love him regardless and give him the best life we can have.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know if he had this rare thing so that if he did, we could try to get in front of it as early as possible from a cognitive, physical, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the hospital was like so thrown off by it. They, you know, these are rare things that most people don't transfer abnormal embryos.
Right.
So hospitals and normal doctors aren't used to navigating these challenges.
Absolutely. So what were you specifically testing for? Like the 14?
It's unidisomy pair. I don't know. This idea of having two mom or two dad chromosomes.
Okay.
And just testing via normal chromosomes, you know, and was he going to have any challenges? And how can we best support him if he did?
Right.
And that test took about a month to get back.
Okay. Okay.
And during that time, he looked... I know you can't really tell just by how someone looks. And so that's wrong of me to say it. But at the same time, he looked and acted so healthy, so healthy that my husband, who, by the way, is not a worrywart like me, he's the calmest, most rational man you will ever meet. Mm-hmm. And even he was nervous. He's like, we were both kind of nervous of like, what if it's one of those cases where they mix the embryos? And they transferred a normal embryo of somebody else's. Like we were that nervous. And like, when's this other shoe going to drop? And maybe it's this other crazy situation.
Right. Well, so it's that, like you said, you've said this over and over, bracing for impact,
right? Yes. Well, my life has told me that, you know, you never know what you're going to find out in life, right? You never know how life is going to play out. So it wouldn't have shocked me if something crazy had happened in my life where I had an embryo that wasn't mine. I mean, that's like the worst nightmare, but it wouldn't have surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And a month in, we finally got those results back. And I, for the first time in probably 10 months, breathed a sigh of relief. Not only was my child healthy, my child was ours.
Wow. That's amazing.
We have a healthy,
I just got the chills.
Beautiful. Yes.
How old is he now?
He is 8 months and
oh my gosh.
You know, motherhood is not easy. And I know this, but I will tell you, having gone through everything I've gone through, there isn't a day that I don't wake up just so thankful and just trying to lean into every moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I still do that as well. And I've said this so many times and it's in my book too. you know, every day I look at my son and I say, I still can't believe you're here. You know, it's just this miracle of science and medicine, yes, and IVF and all the things, you know, and I think the universe and magic play into it as well, yes, you know, like all of that stuff. Faith, yeah, if wild, you lean into that way, totally, you know, so it's, yeah, just, it is, I'm like welling up. I still get, yes, so emotional. And I, when I talk too, to people like you that, you know, have gone through so much and, you know, this is obviously a really interesting story. And I just want to tell people, like, please, no judgment when listening to, yes, Stacey's story. You know, this is your story. Not. And, yeah, I hope not too. And I, you know, I doubt it, but, you know, it's, I'm so glad that you've shared all this stuff and, yeah, you know, everything that you guys went through. And it's just,
well, really, I'm passionate, right? Cause I, you know, yeah, so my friends, my members, you know, we're connected through one of our members, yeah, one of my former members. And, you know, I was pretty open with a lot of them. So they knew what I went through. And I had a friend who also is a business owner. She's 36 or 37. She's like, I don't know if I want to be a mom or not, but after watching what you went through, I'm going to freeze my eggs. Mm. And she, or her embryos, really. Mm-hmm. And so she went through that process and her IVF clinic had her sign a document, which she didn't even really understand, that said, if I get any abnormal embryos, I'm automatically just going to throw them away. Mm. And I, and she and I were talking throughout that whole process. And I was like, hey, like, obviously it's your choice, but do you know what that means? And do you know that my son came from an abnormal embryo? I hope you have tons of healthy embryos. I hope you never have to face this.
Yes.
But I am passionate about education because, absolutely, it's frustrating that some of these fertility clinics are not educating the moms about the potential choices. Yes, donor eggs are out there and it's beautiful that we can have more moms. And if that's the route you have to go, that's the route you have to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's obviously more challenges and some awareness and education to be had, but it's a, it also starts a family, right? But why are we just having people jump to that and not educating around some of these other options?
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
And I have to say, in my 250 plus episodes, Stacey, I've never talked about the specific stuff. So,
oh, interesting.
I think it's so cool that you're sharing it, just because knowledge is power.
Yes.
You know, we want people listening to know this is also an option. This worked for you. You know, yes, this is something to ask about. Do your research, ask your, totally, doctors, get second opinions, talk to, yes, your friends, you know, all this stuff. I think we're all helping each other by putting the truth out there, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Because there, you know, there's nothing wrong with making the decisions you want to make, but at least make them from an informed place. Like that friend of mine, she had no idea what she was signing. No idea.
Right.
Because it's such this different world and it's, right, hard to really have the awareness. You know, I only have the awareness I have because I did 10 of them. Right. Mm-hmm. So I, after you do 10 egg retrievals, you've gone down the Google rabbit hole enough to feel like you know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, I hope no one has to ever do that.
Right.
But I'm thankful for the knowledge and the information I have because of it.
Absolutely. Same.
So I was just so honored that you had me because I'm like, how can I shout from the rooftops and, no, tell more women about things like PRP, ovarian rejuvenation?
Yeah.
Tell women that PGDA testing isn't always the most accurate, you know, because these fertility clinics aren't always sharing that information. I'm, mm-hmm, thankful I went to Life IVF and they were so open and they did. It wasn't about just, I think sometimes there's this pressure for fertility clinics just about the numbers and, mm-hmm, having success. Mm-hmm. Whereas I felt like at Life IVF, it wasn't about just being a number. It was about like my case and how to help me have success for me. And, mm-hmm, that really was incredible. I will always be thankful to them.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out my children's book, which is called Work of Art. You can pick up a copy at infertileafgroup.com. And also make sure to check out Fertility Rally, which is the membership group that Blair Nelson and I started back in 2020, mid-COVID. It is a place with virtual support groups. We have 5 to 6 per week. Every Wednesday, Blair and I host the flagship Rally Together support group, but there's other ones throughout the week as well with other hosts for various topics. We also have IRL events. We have a website full of content and videos. We do Fertility Rally Live every April and every October, which is another virtual event. So lots going on. Check us out on the World Wide Web at fertilityrally.com and on Instagram at Fertility Rally. Thank you all so much for listening. Thanks again to Stacey, and I will talk to you guys next time. Thank you.
Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go. Thief! Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.